Well, I have this cousin who lives in the Florida Keys, and I don't know, 10 days or so ago before the hurricane hit. I'm sure most of you have heard about the hurricanes that have hit in the southern United States and some of the islands that are down there south of that. He was evacuated, and he still hasn't gone back. Just the other day, they finally started allowing residents to go back, but he hasn't returned yet. He knows that he will return to a place where there's no power. He will return to a place where there's no water or sewage system that's working, where right now there's no grocery stores that are open and actually selling food. And so he's not eager to necessarily return, but he doesn't know what he's going to return to. In fact, he doesn't even know if he's going to return to anything in terms of what's left of his home, his house, the place where he lives. It's uncertain right now as where he lives got hit pretty hard, and he's fine, but was evacuated and just doesn't know what he's going to come back to because there was such a devastating storm that came through that area. For many people, wiped away their entire livelihood, their businesses, their homes, their possessions may very well be completely and utterly lost. They say when there's hurricanes like this that one of the most scary, frightening, dangerous parts of a storm like that for people who live on the coast, people who live right next to the ocean and the waters in a place like that, is the storm surge. There's the winds and there's the rain and there's all of it, and all of it's pretty destructive, but the storm surge is one of the most destructive parts of a hurricane like that. See, you know that if you ever go to the beach or something like that there are tides. There's low tide and there's high tide. And the difference is how far the water comes in to the land. Low tide obviously is out. High tide, it comes in further and further and further. But when there's a hurricane like this, something about the pressure of the storm that it creates in relation to the water allows the water to rise way higher than it normally does, just extraordinarily higher sometimes. And because the water rises so high, it means that it pushes further and further in. It means that things that were on land, things that were dry, things that are not supposed to get wet, things that are not supposed to come into contact with the ocean tides, all of a sudden get hit with this surge of water that comes up and further inland. And in a storm like this, it's so strong that things that are normally secure, things that are normally safe and dry, don't get touched by the water, sometimes are so strongly hit that they're completely washed away. And we've seen it, maybe you've seen it in pictures or videos, even over the last couple of weeks as this has been on the news, where the waters have come inland so far, and things that you thought were immovable, things that aren't supposed to be able to be moved by water, by waves, by storms, are just instantly swept away. Trees just cut down and surged into other places. Cars that are supposed to move, but not are supposed to move by water, just kind of knock completely over. Even people's homes and buildings that you'd say were constructed in order to be firm and stable and never move are taken by this water and some knocked over, destroyed, completely swept away. And I don't want to make light of what so many people in the southern United States are dealing with. Even today, people like my cousin who are maybe been evacuated and haven't even returned, don't even know what they're returning to yet. But people who are returning to lives that have been swept away, so many material possessions. But as we continue to talk through this series about soul searching, one thing I do know is that's something that happens to us not just in terms of physical storms out in nature, but sometimes we get storm surges in our lives that knock our souls off center. That deep part of us that's supposed to be stable, that's supposed to be firm, the part of us that gives us the feeling that we're secure, that we're safe, that we have a center from which we live from. Oftentimes, we're just living our life. We're going through everyday life, and all of a sudden, we get this surge into our lives that knocks us over, that destroys that feeling of well-being or that feeling that we're okay. We get all of a sudden a storm surge where there's a diagnosis, And all of a sudden, everything we thought was fine in life and things were going good, we're just rocked at the core of who we are. All of a sudden, we lose a loved one, maybe even unexpectedly. Many of us have been through that. When all of a sudden, life seemed like it was fine, but a storm came up and just that water came in and blew us off the center of where we were. Some of us have experienced financial ruin where things seemed to be going good and we were building our careers and we were building savings, and all of a sudden something happened and a storm came and just knocked us off center, and all of a sudden we didn't feel like we were okay anymore. All of a sudden we lost ourselves. We lost our direction. We didn't know where to turn, but we knew that what used to seem so secure, what used to seem firm in our life, all of a sudden has been swept away. There's water where there was never meant to be water. The waves have come way higher in life than we ever thought, and it's attacked us, it's hit us right deep down in who we are, thrown us off course. You know, it's not the only way that that happens. There's a subtler way that that happens that maybe even is more dangerous because we don't even know it's happening. I mean, those storms that come that alert us to danger, those are terrible things. And I think for many of us, if you're older than 10 years old, there's probably been a time in your life where you felt that real danger of a big storm that's maybe threatened to knock you off center. But the other way that this happens to our souls, that our souls get pushed in a direction where maybe even we didn't even want to go or we didn't expect to go, suddenly it's kind of like if you're at the beach and you're just floating. Have you ever done that? You go out for a nice day and everything's just calm and fine, and you go out into the water and you just float and you're looking up and not paying attention. You're relaxing and everything's going good. And then all of a sudden you look up a few minutes later and you look over to the beach where all your stuff was, and you just realize that you're in a completely different spot. You realize that you've drifted way down the beach, that you're just not where you used to be. And for some of us, that's happened to our souls. That center of who we are, we never saw a big storm coming. It wasn't like there was this huge disaster in our life, but we just kind of been floating and everything's been okay. Maybe we haven't been paying that much attention to our inner self or how we're doing, our emotions, our spirituality, the center of our world and our life that we live out. It's just not something that's been brought to our attention. There hasn't been a big storm, but then all of a sudden we look up and we look around and we go, how did I get here? I didn't even feel like I was drifting. I didn't even feel like I was going anywhere. I thought I was exactly in the same place that I used to be, but then I looked up and I realized that I'm not even close to where I used to be. You know, like your schedule just gets busy, and it starts with one day or one week or one quarter, and then the next thing you know is that the calendar's been so full and you've just been running from one thing to the next thing and getting the kids to this and making sure that you're doing this, and then your job life is filling up and family commitments are filling up, and it's just drifted over time because you've been so distracted with all the things that you have to do that you forgot about thinking about who you are. You started spending some time with people that at first you understood that, oh yeah, they're a little bit negative. And I know they complain a lot. And I know they talk about other people a lot, but it's not that big a deal. But as you started spending more and more time, all of a sudden one day you woke up and you realized, man, I've got a real negative attitude. How did that happen? Excuse me. How did I get to this point where I think this way and I talk about those people, and man, there was no big thing, but it just, over time, I drifted into that kind of negativity. Their negativities rubbed off on me. Maybe there's the things that you gave into, the temptation that you gave into, just every once in a while, just a little bit of escape. Hey, this isn't a big deal if I just do it once or a couple of times. But a couple of times turned into sort of a habit, and a habit sort of evolved into an addiction. And all of a sudden you woke up one day and you said, I don't know why I'm doing this all the time, but I have a really hard time saying no now. This has become a pattern in my life, and I never meant for it to happen, and there was no huge trigger. It's just that I drifted there. Maybe it was that you were let down by people who were close to you, and your self-esteem was just chipped away at one judgmental comment at a time, or one emotional attack or relational attack after another. And you just looked up and realized, I don't know if I'm in a healthy spot anymore. And some of the things that I used to think were real secure, my self-esteem, my self-worth, my confidence, my ability to be who I am way deep down, that my ability to say no to certain temptations, my ability to say yes to the good things in life, I've just drifted from those things and I found myself in a place that I never thought I would be, or a place that I didn't think I would be, but I've just drifted. And whether you've been hammered by a big surge of a storm that's knocked you off center, or whether you've just drifted in your soul, many of us find ourselves in places that aren't healthy, that we've gotten to places where we don't feel like we're being who we ought to be or who we truly are. And for some of us, when this happens, when we lose a grip on our true center, you know, when we lose a grip on our true identity, who we are, no matter what's happening around us, who we are deep down, we experience shifts in our lives as we've drifted. We have perspective shifts. We become a little bit more negative. We start complaining. We lose optimism for the future. Some of us, you know, your perspective when you were a little bit younger was a little bit more optimistic, was a little bit more hopeful. You would attack each day with a little bit more energy, but over time, maybe you've been worn down and you've drifted and you've shifted in your perspective. And you're not as confident as you used to be. You're not as hopeful. You're not moving towards your goals in the same direction. You're allowing yourself to be pushed instead of being proactive about the kind of life that you have because of the way that you now see life. Maybe you've been beat down a little bit by life, by relationships, by things that have been going on in your outer world. Some of us have had directional shifts. We started doing things that we wouldn't normally do. We started losing our resolve to resist temptation or unhealthy habits. We start running from things instead of running to things. We've got a directional shift. For some of us, we've got to a place where we don't even know what our direction is anymore. We've lost that compass that has pointed us in a certain direction. Again, maybe that once we have, but now we've shifted and our direction isn't so sure. Our direction isn't always going in healthy places, and our direction is getting more reactive than it is proactive. Some of us, we've had shifts in our emotions. Talked about it a couple times already, but we've had an emotional shift that has made us less hopeful, more hopeless. We start to just accept the things that are happening in our lives, or accepting the people that we are, instead of believing that there's something better, believing that there's something different, believing that there's goals that we could attain, believing that there's people that we could still become. And some of us, we've just had an emotional shift and we feel a little bit more apathy, a little less hopeful, a little less energetic in our emotions. Some of us have had relational shifts. We've been giving too much influence to people that we know we probably shouldn't give that kind of influence to. We're in relationships that with people that we know these people aren't real good for us, and on different degrees. Maybe they're romantic relationships, maybe they're really deep friendships, but we've just given influence over to people that are steering us in a different direction. Their souls, their lives aren't really rooted and foundational. Maybe they're drifting, and we realize that the more influence we've given to them and the more of ourselves we give to those people, the more we follow them instead of having them be influenced by us, and it's not always taken us in a good direction. Some of us, we're in this place where as our minds or our emotions, our directions have shifted, we're really trying to grab onto anything that's secure or safe. Some of us are looking for brand new things because the things that are in our lives aren't working, that we need a new vocation, a new job, a new person, a new relationship, a new something, a new this, a new that to grab onto because we know, we feel, maybe even subconsciously, that we're drifting in our lives. And as a result, we get discouraged, we feel vulnerable, indecisive, we're no longer sure of ourselves. In summary, we've lost confidence. And this happens the most. We lose confidence in ourselves. We have confidence in the kind of life that we have when we have no hope, when we can't look into the future and see something better, when we can't see that there's going to be progress, when we can't see that we'll get to a different place, that we'll achieve different things. It affects our hope, and when our hope is affected, when our direction for the future is affected, it affects our level of confidence, and we go around, again, as more apathetic people, people who have less self-esteem, less self-worth, less direction, people who are less able to take each day by the horns and run with it and go and do the things that we believe God has called us to do. And I'll tell you this today, that in order to make sure that our lives don't drift and our souls don't drift into unhealthy places, we need a secure center, a healthy foundation that gives us hope, confidence, direction, and security. And today, if you're not sure exactly what your foundation is, what your security is, what you go to for the hope or the confidence, for the direction or the security of your life, or if you know what it should be, but you don't feel like you have those things, you don't feel like you're clinging to that center, then I hope today will be a refreshing time where you come back or where you acknowledge for the first time that maybe you're clinging to things that aren't secure, that in the midst of some of the surges and the storms in your life, you're just grabbing onto things that are just going to get washed away just like you will. And today, I just want to give you the opportunity to get called to something more firm, to something stronger, to build a confidence on a hope that is secure, because we know it in this life there's going to be storms. We know there's going to be big waves. And we know that even in the times where there aren't big waves, we have a propensity to drift, even when things are good, and just to allow ourselves to go wherever the cultural current or our relational current or our emotional current takes us, even if that's not a healthy thing. So I hope today that you'll follow along with me and you'll find a secure place, a secure foundation for you to tether your hope to, because when you have hope, and when you have hope in something that is actually safe and secure and stronger than any storm that comes into your life, you will have hope. And when you have a secure hope that is meaningful and strong, you will have strong confidence. And that confidence will help you to be the person that you've been created to be. And it will help you as you face all kinds of, whether it's struggles, challenges in your life, it will help you face whatever the world brings at you, even if that world is just apathy or just mundane day-to-day, everyday life. So if you have a Bible with you, turn to Hebrews chapter 6. It's towards the end of the New Testament. When we read Hebrews, we know that it was a letter written to some churches with some Jewish people in it, Jewish Christians, people who had been ethnically Jewish, maybe even religiously Jewish, and then had accepted Jesus as their Savior, and that had changed their whole worldview. And so it's a letter to Hebrew churches, why it's called Hebrews. We don't know who the writer is. There's a bunch of guesses, but we're not sure who it is. But it's this letter that is primarily addressed to people who are trying to live out their faith in a world that has a lot of storms. They're people who are often and tempted to be knocked off their center. We see it right here, Hebrews chapter 6, verse 11. It says, our great desire, we don't know who our is, we don't exactly know who the writers are, but our great desire is that you will keep on loving others as long as your life lasts, in order to make certain that what you hope for will come true. In the next few verses, wherever you see hope, go ahead, underline it, circle it, make note of it. It's an important theme here. So they're writing this letter to make sure that people, what they have hope for, they would continue to see that come true. Because then you will not become spiritually dull and indifferent. Instead, you will follow the example of those who are going to inherit God's promises because of their faith and endurance. We want you to be winners. We want you to experience what God has promised you to experience. And the background of this letter is that there are people who are being knocked off their center because life is getting difficult for them. They're probably enduring persecution. That because of their faith, people are coming against them. That the culture is often just bashing up against them. That there's probably serious threats to their well-being because of their faith and how they're living it out. And the writer says, listen, I want you to stay in a healthy place, and I want you to have hope that even though what you're going through is difficult, that what you are going towards is rewarding, is good. I want you to be like the people who could endure and have patience, that what God promised them will come true. That's the hope that I want you to have. And that's the hope that's going to bring you confidence and allow you to not become dull or indifferent. It's not going to allow you to become someone who drifts or someone who's knocked off their center, somebody who becomes apathetic, reactive. No. He's saying, I want you to keep being able to love people the way that you're loving people and the way that you've been called to be. I want you to keep living this powerful life that God's called you to and not let anyone knock you off your center. So I want to give you hope. I know things aren't going well. I know you feel like you've just been hit with waves of persecution, difficulty, struggle. But I want you to keep going. so that you can experience what God has for you. So verse 13, he says, for example, I'll give you an example of where we've seen this in our past, in our history. Remember, these are Jewish people. So he says, for example, there was God's promise to Abraham. Abraham, one of the patriarchs of the Jewish people, one of the trademark people of faith and what it looked like to have faith in God, upon which God gave him great promises. He built his life and lived it out. He says, since there was no one greater to swear by, God took an oath in his own name saying, I will certainly bless you and I will multiply your descendants beyond number. Then Abraham waited patiently and he received what God had promised. Now, when people take an oath, they call on someone greater than themselves to hold them to it. And without any question, that oath is binding. God also bound himself with an oath so that those who received the promise could be perfectly sure that he would never change his mind. So he's writing to a bunch of Jewish people who knew their history well, knew their forefathers, Abraham being kind of one of the biggest stories of faith in their history and in their ancestral history. He says, let me give you an example of what it's like to make sure that you don't become apathetic or indifferent, that you continue to have hope and that you have confidence to do and be the person that God has called you to be. Remember Abraham? God gave him a promise. The promise was that he would have all kinds of descendants. He'd become the father of a great nation. You wouldn't even be able to count how many descendants that he had. That his legacy would be his offspring that would do incredible things in the world. But Abraham was old. He was too old to have children, him and his wife. But God said, I promise this is going to happen to you. I promise to give you these descendants. I promise that this is going to be your life and your legacy. This is who I'm calling you to be. And here in Hebrews, he just recounts the story, kind of summarizes and said, so Abraham was patient. And he just kept moving towards that. By the way, Abraham didn't always believe this. Isaac means laughing because him and his wife laughed when they heard this promise. We're way too old. We haven't had descendants yet. I don't have an heir yet. It's not going to happen. But over time, he had confidence in God's promise. And he believed. He had faith and he built his life around it. And he had a son. And from his son, other sons. And really, this becomes the birthplace of the nation of Israel. Their story that they look back to, this man of faith called out of another place. God said, even though you're too old, I'm going to give you descendants and descendants and descendants. And these descendants will bless the whole world. And it says here that as this story is kind of recounted and summarized, that people take an oath. When they do that, they call on someone greater than themselves to hold it. One of the things that they did in the ancient world is when one person promised to somebody else something that was almost hard to believe, or they entered into a business relationship, and they wanted to say, you can count on me. I'm gonna fulfill my word. I'm going to do exactly what I said that I'm going to do. They would swear an oath. Saying, I'm not just going to tell you that I'm going to do something. I'm going to swear an oath so that you know that I am going to do it. And it says here that when people swore an oath, they would often swear on something greater than themselves. This is kind of like when you go to the bank and you want a loan, but you don't have any money. And so the loan says, well, how do I know that you're going to pay me back? So you bring in a guarantor, somebody who has some money, some net worth, and they sign for you. And you say that, well, if I don't pay it back, they're going to pay it back, which means I'm not just going to answer to the bank, but if I can't pay this back, I got to answer to my friend or my family member, this person that has money. They're my guarantor. They're greater than me. They have a better net worth than I do. This is that God looked around. He says, I want to make it sure that you know that I'm going to come through on my promise. Who's greater than me? And there was nobody greater than God. And so God says, I am going to make an oath and I'm going to swear on myself because God is the greatest being that there is. If you want to swear on someone that you know is going to come through, that is full of truth and faithfulness and will never let you down, God says, that is just me. And so he swore an oath on himself. And there's this story that makes very little sense to us, but in the ancient world, when they swore this kind of oath, they would say, this is so serious. We're entering into a relationship that if I break my word and I break this relationship, it is so serious that I should die for it. And so what they would do is they would take animals, they would cut them in half. It was gruesome, it was disgusting, it was supposed to be. They'd line them up, the halves apart from each other, reminding them that these animals have been torn in two. And then both parties of the agreement, the business arrangement, the oath, would walk through the pieces. And they would symbolically be saying that if I let down my part of the relationship, if I go back on my word, then what has happened to these animals is what should happen to me. So Abraham, after this promise, you can read about it in Genesis chapter 15. He falls into this deep sleep, and there's this dream. And in the dream, there's these animals that have been torn into two and lined up next to them. And he sees then a smoking pot and a fire torch, a representative of God's presence. And those two things go through the pieces. It's God swearing an oath, saying, if I go back on my promise, if I don't come through for you, may I be torn in two, just like these animals. If I break my word, may I be ripped apart in two. That's what should happen to me. That is my oath to you. So verse 18, it says, so God has given both his promise and his oath. He gave his word, and then he made an oath based on that word. These two things are unchangeable because it's impossible for God to lie. Therefore, we who have fled to him for refuge have great confidence as we hold to the hope that lies before us. Some important words at the end of that verse that we just read, this great confidence, it means a strong and powerful encouragement that we would hold to the hope, that we would cling to the hope. This word to hold to the hope is in Greek that this was originally written in. It's a very strong word. We might say something like hold on for dear life to this hope that we have before us. The writer is saying, I want you to be I want you to have this inner confidence that comes from this hope that you just won't let go of, that you'll cling to it so much because of the promise and the oath, because God doesn't lie, because God doesn't change his mind, because God has not just promised, but he's sworn an oath, and that you can rely on him. He will never, ever break his oath. And here's the incentive for you to believe that, for you to, in your life, when you're looking for confidence, when you're looking for a secure place to hold to the hope of God's promises in your life, to base your confidence on that. You remember that story? You remember the oath? You remember the animals that were ripped in two and God symbolically saying to Abraham, if I go back on my promise to you, if I go back on what I've said that I'm going to do, I should be ripped in two. Points us to the cross. The cross says, I guarantee this relationship, not just if I break my word, but even if you break yours. The cross says that in Jesus, God was willing to say, if anything breaks the relationship that we have, not just should I be torn in two for what I've done, my lie, but even if you break your side of the agreement, even if you break your word, even if you're not faithful, then I should be torn in two. I will be torn in two. Jesus gets on the cross, not because God didn't come through on his promises, but because we have failed to uphold our side of the bargain. And God still said, I will be willing to be ripped in two so that our relationship will not be broken, so that my promises to you will not be broken. Not only can I not break my promises to you, but you can't break my promises to you. I will always be here for you. Our relationship is secure. It is firm. I have promised my presence to you. I have promised my spirit to you. I have promised forgiveness to you. I have promised restoration and redemption for you. I've promised to walk every day with you. And I won't break my word, and I won't let you break my word to promise to be there for you. And we look at the cross. When we look at Jesus being willing to be nailed there and ripped in two as he was crucified, it's God saying, I love you so much that not only could I not break my word, but you can't break my word for me. I will uphold this relationship no matter what. The cross tells us that we're loved. Loved enough that God would give himself to us, sacrifice his son for us, that we are forgiven. That there's nothing we could do to break the relationship if we're willing to accept his forgiveness because he's willing to be torn in two for us. It means that we're justified. This is kind of a theological term, but it means that not on the basis of what you could do, but on the basis of what Jesus has done for you, you are made innocent. That what you've done doesn't keep you away from God anymore if you're willing to accept the forgiveness he's lavished into your life. And it means that you have a glorious future. That the Spirit of God can be with you each and every day, empowering your life. The writer of Hebrews says, this is what we cling to. This is what we hold on to for dear life. Don't let go of this anywhere in your life, because this is what will give you hope. Our hope is the promise of the presence of God What do we cling to? What do we hold on to? It's God saying, I'm going to be with you no matter what. And I will never break that promise to you. And not even your actions could break that promise if you're willing to cling to me, hold on to me. That's our hope. That's where you can get confidence. That whatever's happening in life, God wants to live side by side with you, walking in your life. That you can have that hope of the promise of the presence of God now in whatever you go through, in the future whatever you're going to go through, and for eternity. The cross tells us we're loved, forgiven, justified, and we have a glorious future in that. So verse 19 then says, this hope that we're talking about is a strong and trustworthy anchor for our souls. It leads us through the curtain into God's inner sanctuary. He's talking about, again, something the Jewish people would know about. In their temple, there was this Holy of Holies, the place where God's concentrated presence dwelt. And there was a huge, thick curtain that was put in between where everybody else could go and where only God's presence was, and the priest could go only once a year if he was properly washed and forgiven and cleansed and all that kind of stuff. It's a dangerous place to be because God can be very dangerous. The writer of Hebrews says, this hope is a strong and trustworthy anchor for our souls. This is what's strong. This is what you hold on to for dear life, because when everything else is getting swept away, you need something secure. It leads us through the curtain. In other words, in Jesus, he threw this anchor, this heavy, strong, firm, secure foundation into the Holy of Holies, into the presence of God, because we see that when Jesus was crucified, that curtain ripped in half, that God's presence was now available to everyone in an incredible way. Now, there is an anchor in Jesus Christ that's been tossed into where the presence of God is so that you can experience that, so that you can tether yourself to it, so that you can hold on to dear life to that anchor, so that whatever's happening in your life and whatever drift might tempt you to go a different way and whatever disasters come upon you, you hold on to that, you cling to it for dear life, because that's God's presence in your life. It's who you are. It's what makes you you. God living inside of you, empowering you. It's real confidence, because God will never, ever go back on his promise, on his promises. Your confidence, listen, in life, and if you don't feel like you're a confident person, if you don't feel like you can really go be who you are, if you're always worried about what could happen and what is happening and what other people's opinions are and what's happening in life, your confidence is only as strong as your hope. And your hope is only as strong as what you find hope in. That's why the writer of Hebrews said, listen, I don't want you to be apathetic or indifferent. I want you to continue to be able to live lives of love, to make a big impact on this world, to actualize the person that God's called you to be. So you need to hold firm to this foundation, this anchor that's been tossed into the presence of God, and never ever let it go, because storms are going to come and drift is going to happen. This is how you remain strong and confident. So listen, this week, here's my challenge to you. Number one, let go of unstable anchors. What do you grab onto when you feel needy, when you feel lack of confidence, when you're struggling, but you know really deep down are not secure things? Maybe it's bad habits, things that you use to relax, but you just know it's not a good habit for you, things that you use to escape, but you know it's not healthy. Maybe it's an unhealthy relationship, it's a person, you know they're not real good for you, you know they don't take you in a good direction, but you just seem to always run back to them, and you want to know what they think, what they say, and how they would respond, and even when they take you in a bad direction, you follow them. Maybe it's just more and more busyness, more and more work. What are the anchors in your life that really aren't very secure, but you always run back to? Do you acknowledge them and let them go? And then secondly, cling to Christ for dear life. Hold on like your soul depends on it. Think about these questions. Who does God say that you are? I know the world will tell you a lot of things about who you are, but if you're willing to accept what Christ has done on the cross, if you're willing to give your life to him and surrender to him, he says, you're my child. You've been created in my image. You're loved. You're forgiven. You're justified. You're valued. You're cared for. I don't care whatever storm comes into your life. I know those things will knock you off your center, but cling with all that you are to who God says you are. Who provides for your needs? You know, those times where you worry about if you have enough, your money, your stuff, your family, your health, just remember who provides for your needs. I believe it's your Heavenly Father who has every resource at his disposal. He's not needy. He's not out of stuff. He has everything that you need to live the life that he's called you to live. Who created your soul? That deep down part of you that we talked about last week that makes you who you are, where did that come from? I believe it's from Jesus, who is wisdom, who wants to lead us to a flourishing life. That he says, if you'll cling to me, if you'll hold on to me, if you'll follow me, I will lead you to a place where your soul is healthy and safe and secure and strong. In other words, stop depending on all of these unstable anchors. Don't think anything, don't do anything, don't go anywhere without a conscious and prayerful focus on following Jesus. You know what this looks like? What does it look like to cling to Jesus in everyday life? It looks like how you treat your phone. Have you ever walked out the door in the morning without your phone and then realized it? And then panicked and said, I don't know how I could get through the day without my phone. What if something happens? What if I miss something? What if I can't check social media? What if I can't make a text? What if somebody's trying to get a hold of me? And you panic, and so you run back home and you look for it and you find it, and all of a sudden this relief washes over you. Oh, I've got my anchor for the day. Imagine your relationship with Jesus Christ was like that. I can't step out of the door without a conscious acknowledgement of God's presence. God, in prayer, I don't want to go anywhere or face anything without you, because what if I need you? In fact, I need you every breath that I take. Hold on for dear life. Acknowledge his presence in your life as many minutes, as many seconds as you possibly can. Go nowhere without thinking about him, without praying him. Attack no obstacle or challenge or struggle without giving it to him first. Make no decision without praying about it. The more you do that, I hope that you'll feel the vulnerability whenever you try and step out without him. It'll cause you to run back and cling to him for dear life in everything that you do. We have a son who's just over a year now. And I've noticed over the last couple of months that he's got a move. He's got something that he does whenever he has an unsure moment. There's lots of unsure moments. He does the same thing every time. Sometimes it's just that he's in his crib and he wants to get out. Sometimes it's that our dog, who's a little bit bigger than him, rushes by and knocks him over a little bit. Sometimes it's when he comes to stairs and it's just too daunting to try and get down the stairs all by himself. Sometimes it's just that he's not feeling great, that he needs a snuggle. He's emotionally needy. He wants to be picked up. He wants to be held. He's hungry. Move is the same all the time. He just looks at me, looks at his mom, and goes like this. Pick me up. Extends his arm. Carry me, Dad. Carry me, Mom. You know what I've noticed? That all of his problems are really not huge problems for me. Except when he has a dirty diaper. That's more of a mom issue. None of the things that he's facing are really that big of a deal to me. They're all things that I can handle. They're all things that I can deal with. They're all things that pretty quickly I can resolve. And so it's my joy when he holds his hands up. Every time it's my joy, whatever I'm doing. Because I just look at him and I love him so much to get down and scoop him up and pick him up into my arms and make sure that he has whatever he needs. Arms out. In all your needs and all your struggles. And I pray for you, my hope for you, is that as you long for and reach out, as you cling to Jesus Christ and a heavenly Father who has all the resources to be there for you, to give you the life he's called you to live, you'd experience what it's like to be that needy child who's scooped up in the arms of his loving heavenly Father. Let's pray. God, we love you. We thank you for being everything that we need. Thank you for being the kind of God that nothing's too big for. Thank you, God, that even though there's storm surges in our world and there's waves, there's rain, there's wind, things are scary. Some of us have experienced just extreme storms in our lives. God, I pray that you would help us in faith to reach our arms up to you, and that you would scoop us up as we cling to you, that you would become our anchor of hope that gives us confidence in this world to be the people you've created us to be, to live lives of love, to never be thrown so far off course that we forget how strong you are. Strengthen our faith, because you are strong.